Opening night did not disappoint. Manchester City had a scare, but won as they begun the defence of their title. Paris Saint-Germain flexed their muscles. João Felix shone in a big Barcelona victory. We had a stalemate at San Siro, and a goalkeeper's goal in Rome grabs a dramatic draw for Lazio. Let's get into it. The UEFA Champions League is back. I'm Rob Daly, delighted to have alongside me the European football expert Kevin Hatchard to look back on Tuesday night's action. We'll be joined shortly by Guy Havard and Jonathan Beck. Kev, first of all, where do you want to start? You want to start with the goalkeeper, don't you?
Ivan Provodil, yeah. Can we do the whole show on that, please? Absolutely remarkable. Lazio trailing by a goal to nil, literally the last seconds of the game. Brilliant cross into the penalty area, and he sneaks away from defenders and powers the ball home with his head like he's been doing it all his life, and then celebrated like he's been scoring goals all his life. Utterly remarkable, and a brilliant way for Lazio to mark the start of their Champions League campaign.
Okay, let's go through the scores quickly from Tuesday in Group E. Feyenoord 2, Celtic 0, Lazio 1, Atletico 1. Can't believe it, really. Group F, AC Milan 0, Newcastle 0, Paris Saint-Germain 2, Dortmund 0. Group G, Young Boys 1, Leipzig 3, Manchester City 3, Savena Zvezda 1. And in Group H, Barcelona 5, Antwerp 0, Shakhtar Donetsk 1, Porto 3. When the draw was made, of course, there was a lot of excitement surrounding Group F, not least because it pitted Paris Saint-Germain against Dortmund on opening night. Guy and Kevin were watching this for Matchday Live.
Keeper waits. Mbappe waits. Here comes Kylian Mbappe and scores. Keeper went the right way, wasn't too far away from it. But the first Champions League goal of this new Paris Saint-Germain era is scored by a man from the previous era, Kylian Mbappe.
Beautifully put away, no doubt about that. Low, hard, goalkeeper went the right way.
Hakimi has continued his run. Hakimi! Oh, that's brilliant! That is wonderful from the fullback. He just danced his way into the penalty area, and it was almost Mbappe-esque the way he just sat the goalkeeper down and flicked it into the back of the net, and Paris Saint-Germain have doubled their lead in this second half.
Sharp passing, good control, and then Hakimi knows that Hummels is coming, so he just shifts his body. He wants to take it on his right foot, we know that, and so he improvises. He goes with the outside of the boot, just jabs it into the far corner. It's a lovely, lovely goal.
And Dortmund had no reply. They did hit the post through Bino Gittens. Guy joins Kev and I now. And Guy, it looked like a deserved win for Paris Saint-Germain on the night.
Yeah, I think so overall. It was probably a 7 out of 10, wasn't it? It was no sort of glitz or glamour from them. They were the better team in the first half. The penalty was a big moment. The handball that was given by the referee gave Paris Saint-Germain the chance to take the lead. And then after that, it was very much their game to lose, Mbappe converting the penalty and then that wonderful goal by Hakimi. But I think there are one or two things that Luis Enrique, who's still out on the pitch as the players go around and say thank you to the supporters, many who have remained in the ground, will know that he's got plenty to work on. And that's sometimes a good thing, isn't it, for a coach to win a game and still have plenty to work on.
I feel like it's important psychologically for them to pick up an important win like this, because they haven't been playing particularly well in Liga. They haven't been putting enough points on the board. I think it's the pace of play which is the issue. And this has often been the thing that's been levelled against Luis Enrique. Yes, the patterns are pretty. Yes, they're circulating the ball. They're getting lots of players involved. But do they drag defenders out of position? In that first half, the answer was no, not really. Didn't really make enough chances. There's one really nice change of pace where Vitinha found himself in space, hit the far post. The penalty changes everything. It's one of those tight decisions. Sometimes it goes for you, sometimes it goes against you. I don't think Dortmund really recovered. And when the second goal goes in, then it's really, really tough for them in the chasing the game. So I think both teams can take some positives from it, but both teams know they've got a lot of work to do.
Attempts on target at a premium. Paris only had two and scored two. Dortmund had one themselves. There was lots of excitement about seeing this new-look front three for the first time. Guy, you were telling us, first time that Kolo Muani, Dembele and Mbappe started together. How did they play as an attacking force?
I think this, again, it's a work in progress, isn't it? It was his first start tonight, Kolo Muani, and he didn't have too much of the ball. He had a couple of sort of half chances, but I felt the front three didn't work as smoothly as they would have wanted. But as Kevin has said previously, I think that's going to take time. And so there weren't the amount of opportunities that Paris Saint-Germain would have hoped for. But that said, Mbappe had quite a few chances, so it could have been a sort of a 3 or 4 scoreline in the end, but I think Kolo Muani will see better performances from him as the weeks go on, but he's got the best part of sort of 70-80 minutes under his belt, which is impressive.
I thought it was actually the players behind them that impressed. I thought it was actually Vitinha and Zaire Emery in those number 8 positions that looked the brightest, that looked as though they could take players out of the game. And Mbappe had his moments. I think when Dortmund tired, they started to create more opportunities. But I think that first half was more instructive when Dortmund came to Paris with a back five and said, OK, let's see if you can break us down. Largely, they couldn't in that first half, and it took that penalty to do it. So early days, very early days. They've got the raw material. Now they've got to show they can make best use of it.
This is a Dortmund team now without Jude Bellingham, ripping up for Real Madrid. How are we seeing this team develop and transition, Kev?
Yeah, it's a tough one. I thought there were positives in the sense that the body language was good, the work ethic was good, the discipline in that first half was good. I think the difficulty was they just couldn't get high enough up the pitch to really use the pace of Adeyemi and Marlon. Adeyemi's a young player. I think he's in a bit of a trough in terms of his form at the moment. He hasn't scored a goal. He doesn't quite look the same player we saw towards the end of last season. That's going to happen. He's a very young player. Marlon, I think it was a disappointing one from him tonight because he had that one big chance in the first half and couldn't really get involved. So, yeah, a lot to work on. I think they'll be a completely different force at home when they play their usual formation, when they've got that incredible crowd behind them. And I think this was a tough one to take.
I think Dortmund, they probably knew, didn't they, Guy, going into tonight, this is our toughest game on paper in the group and we start with it on match day one.
Yeah, I think so. They would have thought that anything they could get out of this game here tonight would have been a bonus. They've got Milan next at home in Dortmund, and it's going to be their home form, isn't it, that will see them through, if indeed that is to be the case. They need to rack up a lot of points. It was a different style today. The first half, they sort of played on the counter-attack, trying to use pace, and then they brought on a couple of big men and tried to put the ball into the area, and Füllkrug won a couple of headers and caused one or two problems. It was interesting that Sebastian Haller, who was started at the weekend, didn't even come off the bench today. So they have options there. But I think at the moment, we thought Paris Saint-Germain were favourites to win this group. But Borussia Dortmund certainly will see them in better form, I think, at home.
I think with Sebastian Haller, I think what we're seeing is what we expected to see, quite frankly. I mean, the guy's had an amazing return from testicular cancer. He came back way earlier than anybody thought he would. And having done that, he actually made a positive difference to Dortmund's season last season. There was always going to be some kind of physical and mental hangover from that. I think as well, we've got to bear in mind, when they didn't get that win on the final day of last season, he missed a penalty. And that's going to have a psychological impact as well. And the guy that we know, we haven't quite seen this season. They've got a few players like that, still wrestling with their games, not quite at 100%, but it doesn't mean they won't get there.
Kylian Mbappe, by the way, scored in the Champions League for Paris Saint-Germain for a 7th successive season, equaling Edinson Cavani's record for the club. No surprise to see him back amongst the goals. The other match in Group F this evening was one of the early kickoffs. Newcastle United ended a 20-year wait to return to the Champions League as they travelled to AC Milan. Mark Scott and Daniela Fisichella watched an entertaining game for Match Day Live that remarkably finished 0-0. it was a game that Milan will come away from wondering how they didn't take the 3 points. They had so many chances, especially in the first half, and it was generally one-way traffic. But a combination of some really good goalkeeping from Nick Pope and some poor finishing meant that they didn't take any of the opportunities. The second half was a bit more even. Newcastle seemed to come into the game, push a bit higher up, ask a few more questions. But Milan, you'd still say overall in that second half, had the better of it. But there was almost a sting in the tail. Sean Longstaff with that ping from the edge of the area, and the substitute goalkeeper, who'd only been on for around about 10 minutes, Marco Sportiello, with a super save to stop Newcastle snatching it in stoppage time. It could have been a Newcastle win with that moment, but overall, it should have been a Milan win.
Yes, it was a very entertaining 0-0. Milan were able to shake off the disappointment of the derby, lost at the weekend 5-1 against Inter, and they were able to impose the rhythm from the start. The game wasn't played at a very high intensity, but that suited Milan, who were dangerous on both flanks with Chukwueze and Leao, who missed a lot of chances, especially in the second half. Milan were also dangerous from that ball situation. Newcastle in the first half especially confirmed the impression that we had in looking in at the Premier League games. They are not quite at the same pace as last year, but as the game went on, Milan faded away a little bit, still had chances, but the last big chances, as you mentioned, was for Longstaff. And as a result goes, I think definitely Newcastle are going to be the happier of the two.
I think perhaps both clubs will feel a degree of satisfaction. Remember, Milan absolutely hammered in the derby at the weekend. They've got their Champions League campaign underway with a point. As for Newcastle, two decades away from Europe's top tier, and they have begun with a point away at one of the big clubs in Europe.
The thoughts of Mark and Daniela earlier on today. Let's get the thoughts now of the Newcastle United boss, Eddie Howe, proud of his team's performance at San Siro.
I thought the players gave everything today. It's a very good defensive performance. Put our bodies on the line. We needed to. Felt we could have played a little bit better with the ball today, and forward areas a little bit frustrated, but the collective mentality of the group very strong. I think it has to be to come here and get something. I think there's a lot of emotion in the performance tonight. I think you could tell everyone was very keen to impress, and sometimes that can work against you if you're trying too hard. There was elements of that I felt in our performance, but again, the way we defended, Nick Pope's attitude, the back four's collective mentality to protect our goal was of the highest level. And you know, they threatened early on. It was a strange game because I thought we were very competitive. I thought it was an even game, but they were getting the chances and we weren't. But we stayed strong.
They certainly did. Milan had 25 shots on the night, the most they've had in a Champions League game without scoring since October 2005. OK, still to come, we're going to look at more of the action from the night in this season's Champions League, including the start for the defending champions.
Take UEFA Champions League Matchday Live with you, wherever you go. With audio commentary, real-time stats and much, much more, get the complete experience and download the official Champions League app today.
So how would Manchester City begin their title defence against Serbian champion Crvena Zvezda in Group G? Jonathan Beck was watching.
Osman Bukhari going through and he scored! Incredible! They barely registered as an attacking force. One break. Pep Guardiola said they were dangerous in the transition. He mentioned it 2, 3, 4 times and in the pre-match interview. They've taken the lead. Remarkably, it is Manchester City 0, Crvena Zvezda 1.
Alvarez finds Haaland. Alvarez on the overlap. He's got it in!
It's taken Manchester City just over a minute of the second half, but they've equalised. It's in from Alvarez. It's a curling one. Oh, the goalkeeper who came to punch and just glances it into his own net. He's been the hero for Crvena Zvezda tonight. He almost saved Manchester City from going 2-1 up just a moment ago. Rodri allowed to go all the way and finding the corner. Beautiful goal, and Manchester City have breathing space. It's Rodri, it is Manchester City 3, Crvena Zvezda 1.
Jonathan joins us now, and Jonathan, for a moment, it didn't last long, probably just a half-time break, but Slovena Zvezda were dreaming of a famous win.
And what a half-time break that must have been in the away dressing room at the City of Manchester Stadium. Having been under the cosh for the entirety of the first half, in stoppage time, they actually break and score. Osman Bukhari just onside. Really cool finish, you have to say, past Edison. And their first effort on target goes in. But whatever Pep said at halftime, they came out firing just over a minute in. Julian Alvarez exchanging passes with Erling Haaland. Those two have been brilliant all season so far. They've started every game together, Haaland and Alvarez. And before tonight, they'd either scored or assisted 11 of City's 14 goals. Another successful tactical twist from Guardiola, putting those two together. And Alvarez was brilliant all night, buzzing around Haaland, doing all the running and all the kind of work that Haaland doesn't really need to do and certainly doesn't want to do by the looks of it. Not that City need him to do it either. Rodri was elegant and brilliant all night, and he capped it with the third goal. In between that, it's a real shame for Omri Glazer, who was the man of the match for Svena Zvezda, but a curling free kick from Alvarez from the left-hand corner of the area was glanced into his own net by the goalkeeper, who came out to punch and just didn't get the right contact on it, really. It was given to Alvarez, and I'm sure the goalkeeper didn't want it himself. But City deserved winners. I think they had upwards of 30 efforts on goal, and it was about three for Svena Zvezda. But there's encouragement there. They were ambitious in the second half, particularly after falling 2-1 down. So they may well give the likes of Young Boys and Leipzig in the group a more of a game.
Well, player of the match, Rodri, said City boss Pep Guardiola was quite calm in the dressing room at halftime, despite being behind.
You cannot be angry after what you see in the first half. So, of course, a bit upset in the fact that we have to take the responsibility to score, because it was, I think, most of them clear chances we should score. But football is like this. Sometimes in West Ham again, we have the same situation, but we stay calm. I think the most important part is to stay calm in these situations and don't be overexcited. So the result, so we come back, and it was a good performance.
Rodri speaking there, and he's always good for a big goal, isn't he, Kev? He was tonight to kill the game.
Yeah, and increasingly so, actually. That's been something he's really added to his game, obviously famously in the final, but he is probably the best player in his position in the world right now, maybe, I think, in terms of what he brings, in terms of the leadership, quiet leadership, but leadership, in terms of the physical aspect, in terms of the technique, in terms of never giving the ball away, and now in terms of scoring important goals. It's not really an area where you can fault him.
Jonathan, for City now, you know, they're getting results like this without Kevin De Bruyne and Jack Grealish and John Stones tonight, and they'll be expecting to go on and win this group eventually.
Yeah, I think so. They've got Mateo Kovacic to come back as well. He's got a back problem that he picked up just before the international break. So they're expecting those three. De Bruyne is obviously longer term, but they're expecting Kovacic, Grealish and Stones back, if not for the weekend, then certainly for the week after, and it'll just grow. It's interesting when you look at the bench, actually, for the depth of Manchester City squad. The bench tonight, you take two goalkeepers out of the way, Ortega and Carson. You've got Calvin Phillips, a defensive midfielder, Gvardiol, Akanji, defenders, and then two real youngsters in Rico Lewis and Oscar Bob, and only really Jeremy Doku, who is a really attacking talent, who did come on. It's not the best stock bench for Manchester City, but there is real talent there, and in the end, the 11 on the field from the start were more than good enough. It was just a case they just couldn't put the ball in the net. You know, Erling Haaland now, that's four games in a row in the Champions League he hasn't scored, but he could easily have had a hat-trick on another night.
In the other game in the group, RB Leipzig in the early kickoff went to Young Boys and won by 3-1. Mohamed Simakon with the header to put them ahead. They were really on top early, Leipzig, but Young Boys settled into the game. Mašak Elia with a fine strike to get it level 12 minutes before the break, but goals into the final 17 minutes from Zavar Schlager and Benjamin Šeško off the bench got Leipzig a big win to start their Champions League campaign, Kev.
Really important win, but not a surprising one, because you look at the way that Leipzig have played generally across the season. They went to Bayern and absolutely smashed them in the Super Cup, played really, really well in that game, had a bit of a shock against a very good Leverkusen team, lost by the odd goal in five, but since then they've won every game and they've been scoring lots of goals. The depth they have in attack is outrageous, really, because you've got Xavi, you've got Dani Olmo, you've got Benjamin Šeško, who hasn't been starting games, he's coming on as a sub, you've got Luis Openda, who's been scoring goals, And so you've got all of that quality. I'm really pleased for Gustavo Schlager because he's had a couple of really serious injuries since he's got to Germany. And every time he's come back fighting, every time he's worked so hard to get back fit, he does pack a punch from range. So, look, I think there'll be a danger. I do. I think they're going to qualify from this group. I think it's going to be a great battle between them and City. And I think once they get there, they're going to be dangerous.
OK, let's do the two games from Group E, Kev. Starting with Feyenoord 2, Celtic 0. Feyenoord back in the UEFA Champions League after an absence of their own. Celtic finished the game with nine men, and in truth, Arne Slot's side seemed to deserve the victory.
Yeah, Feyenoord the better team. I think the goal that broke the game open was a horrible one from Celtic's point of view. It's a free kick from Calvin Stengs that goes right through the wall. Joe Hart, unsighted, can't get there. And as you say, you know, had a couple of men sent off. I thought Feyenoord created lots of chances. It could have been a bigger win. Johan Bakshi is a really interesting one, I find, the guy who got the second goal, because he's found very much his best form in the Netherlands. It was with AZ at one stage, now it's with Feyenoord. Came to England probably a bit too early in his career, didn't really work out for him, but super talented player. They're a real threat, you know, especially at home. They're a real threat. They've had good European experience of late. I think they smashed Shakhtar, didn't they, last season, maybe in the Europa League. In the Conference League, they got all the way to the final a couple of seasons ago. So, yeah, they're a tough team to overturn.
Igor Pashao had a penalty saved by Joe Hart in the game. Goals disallowed for offside as well. Final deserving winners. But Lazio Atletico, it might be the story of the night, really. Goalkeeper scoring, just the fourth goalkeeper to ever score a Champions League goal, Ivan Provedel, 95th minute equalising header. You loved that, Kev.
Oh, I loved it so much. Yeah. Because the thing I really love about it as well, it's brilliant when goalkeepers score, full stop. But a lot of the time when goalkeepers score, it's a bit scrappy, it's a bit of a goal mouth mess, yeah. And maybe they jab a leg out and they put it in. Oh, no, no. This was the towering header of a guy who's already scored 25 goals that season. It was absolutely brilliant. And Luis Alberto, gorgeous cross, typical of him for the header. But, yeah, sensational goal. I don't think Diego Simeone will be quite as enthusiastic as we are about it, because Atletico very, very close to what would have been a precious win, in what I think is going to be a pretty tight group.
Yeah, Lazio Atletico final, Celtic the section, and on match day two, Atletico host Feyenoord. It's Antwerp. From Group H, it's Antwerp, Shakhtar, and then the other game in Group E, Celtic back home as they take on Lazio. OK, let's go to Group H. Barcelona beat Antwerp by 5-0. Royal Antwerp making their debut in the UEFA Champions League. Lamine Yamal became Barca's youngest and the second youngest player in Champions League history behind Youssoufa Moukoko. But really, João Félix's link-up play with Robert Lewandowski scored two himself, Felix. May 1 for Lewandowski is the story of the night.
I think there's an irony on the night that Atletico got pegged back by a late goal from a goalkeeper and Atletico didn't add to that goal, that the guy that they've loaned to Barcelona absolutely sparkled. Terrific performance from him. Looks really, really happy to be there. Said he would have been really happy to be there before he made the move. And he just looks like the real João Félix. And I don't think we've seen that for a while. So he was great. Lewandowski scored. There's a real buzz about them right now. Won 5-0 against Betis at the weekend. For poor old Antwerp, welcome to the Champions League.
Yeah, absolutely right. Let's hear from João Félix on that burgeoning partnership with Lewandowski.
Yeah, he's a top striker, one of the best in the history of football, and it's easy to play with him. I saw him before, I know his movements. I told him that I will play near him to have some support, and that's what I'm doing, and I'm here to help him to score goals.
João Félix speaking there after his two goals and one assist tonight in the Champions League. Gavi got the other goal for Barcelona as they beat Royal Antwerp. Let's go to the other game in Group H, which finished Shakhtar 1, Porto 3. All the goals coming inside the opening half an hour, and one player in particular starring for Porto, Kevin, that win in Germany.
Yeah, Galeno, who is a Brazilian wide player who got the first goal, a bit of a poacher's goal. fine finish for the second after a mistake by Shakhtar, then teed up Mehdi Taremi, who, you know, him staying at the club, he was very strongly linked with a move to Milan. They were in talks. It didn't happen. And I think that's just a massive boost for Porto because he's a proven Champions League goal scorer at domestic level as well. Porto have made a pretty solid start in the Primera Liga, and this is a really good marker for them. For Shakhtar, it's tough. It's really, really tough, given the situation they're in, given that they're not playing at home, given the players they've lost. I mean, you look at the quality of players they've lost, you know, for obvious reasons, and then that mounts up to a lot of problems. So I thought they stuck at it. I thought that, you know, they got a goal back, but I think this is going to be tricky for them at this kind of level.
Antwerp Shakhtar on a match day two, an early kickoff actually that night in Belgium, and a Porto versus Barcelona, a late one, not bad, on the 4th of October. So that was all of Tuesday night. The remaining 16 teams kick off their Champions League campaigns on Wednesday. Match Day Live will take you through the night, starting from 1800 CEST. Guy and Jonathan join me and Kevin to look ahead to what's in store, and we have to start really, Guy, with Bayern versus Manchester United. A glamour tie this week.
Yeah, it is, isn't it? A repeat of one of the great Champions League finals, and I think Manchester United will have to try and channel their inner 1999 when they face Bayern, because things aren't going well for them at the moment. Are they on or off the pitch? They've got problems, obviously, with the takeover still to be completed. Jadon Sancho falling out with Erik ten Hag, and then on the pitch, that defeat against Brighton with boos from the home supporters, and just two wins so far this season for United, and they were slightly fortunate against Wolves and Nottingham Forest. So a return to the Champions League for one of the giants of European football, but they're up against a team who've strengthened, who are the champions, and Bayern with Harry Kane scoring goals for so far will fancy their chances. I think from a United point of view, it could be a game and a performance to try and kickstart the season, but I would imagine they would have preferred to start against Copenhagen or Galatasaray, not away to Bayern.
They do have the positive news that Mason Mount and Rafa Varane have been training after injury. We'll see if they feature. Kimmich to be assessed for Bayern due to an inflammation issue. Elsewhere in that group, Galatasaray face Copenhagen. In Group B, Sevilla face Lens, and Arsenal face PSV. And Jonathan Beck, Arsenal are back in the Champions League.
Yeah, 7 years away. They both faced each other, PSV and Arsenal, in the Europa League group stage last season as well. Ruud van Nistelrooy in charge of PSV on that occasion. They lost at Arsenal. They won at home. Luke de Jong is in great form at the moment. He was asked about a recall to the Dutch national side. He's officially retired. He says he's happy with that decision, but PSV are reaping the benefit. They've conceded only one goal so far in the Eredivisie. Top of the table after 4 wins, 8 wins and a draw from their 9 games, including the qualifiers. But Arsenal, they've started okay. It started really well and then had a couple of draws, and then beating Everton at the weekend. Pep Guardiola, one of the managers that was looking on and just showing how resilient they are. So this will be an interesting one. Both got out of the group last season. Both went on to lose in the knockout stage. PSV actually lost to Sevilla, who are in their group. Arsenal going out to Sporting on penalties. But yeah, there'll be two clubs who feel that they belong back at this top table, and two clubs who really can be exciting going forward and score lots of goals.
Confirmed no Gabriel Martinelli for Arsenal, pulled up in the weekend win over Everton. We'll see who starts in goal as well, whether it be David Raya or Aaron Ramsdale. Sevilla-Lens the other game in that group. Group C, Braga, Napoli and Real Madrid versus Union Berlin, Kevin Hatchard.
Absolutely extraordinary. You know, if you'd have said to somebody a few years ago, Union Berlin are going to be playing Real Madrid in the Champions League, they would not have believed you for a microsecond. This is a club that was never even in the Bundesliga a few years ago. They've got better every season, and they've earned this. They really have. And I just hope that they can compete in the way that we know they can.
Well, Jude Bellingham faced them 6 times in the Bundesliga and did not score nor assist in any of those matches. So let's see if they can keep La Liga's informed player quiet. Braga take on Napoli. Then in Group D, Real Sociedad face Inter. Benfica versus Salzburg. Inter runners-up last season, Kev.
And looking really, really sharp. You know, they've won all of their games in Serie A. They look a really balanced outfit.
Well, that's all we've got time for. Thank you very much for listening. Matchday Live is on air from 6 p.m. CEST every Champions League match night throughout the group stages. And a reminder, on Wednesday, full commentary of Real Madrid versus Union and Bayern versus Manchester United. Plus, we have extended updates of Arsenal versus PSV and the goals as they go in. And remember to download this podcast after every match night. But for now, from me, Rob Daly, and the rest of our Matchday Live team, it's goodbye.
You've been listening to UEFA Champions League Matchday Live.